Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to challenge and support military veterans to reach their peak potential in their civilian career. Joining me today for episode number 268 is Stacey Baer.
I do want people to try and find a way to connect to beauty. That's what I think, especially veterans, but all people, to find a way to connect to beauty and joy. And that might be the outdoors, but it might be teaching. It might be art, it might be filmmaking, it might be photography, it might be writing, it might be working on your car, rebuild a car, like find something that allows you to be more than who you are. And I think that's really the key thing.
Well, what to say about today's episode? I'll say that this interview is unlike any one that I've done before, and that's saying something in 260 plus of these things. When they launch the Stacey Baer Fan Club one day, I'm signing up as their charter member. Stacey is awesome, and every military veteran and their significant other should listen to this episode. Just some quick things that I did not include in his bio. He was National Geographic Explorer of the Year in 2014. He has been in the Adventure Not War documentary and continues that work. He head up the Sierra Club Outdoors for a long time, was a brand champion for the North Face. He is just a really incredible guy, and I just most appreciated his candor, his vulnerability, his courage, and his example in this interview. So I just want to get right into it. I'm not even going to plug iTunes reviews today. Check out the show notes at beyonduniform.org, and let's get into this because it's an awesome conversation. Joining me today, just south of Salt Lake City, Utah, in Sandy, Utah, my guest today is Stacey Baer. Stacey, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. It's like I was just telling you before the show, it's an honor to be on. Not many podcasts go this many episodes with no slowdown in sight.
I love it, man. I appreciate that. And for listeners, you've probably heard Robin Brown's episode 261. I talked to Robin, fell in love with her career path and her story, and checked out a video that she's in that Stacey's also in that's called Adventure Not War, and was really blown away. And as soon as we had that interview, Steve and I were scheming to try and figure a way to finagle Stacey to get on the show, which is, as you'll learn, it's kind of hard to do because he is very active in what he does for a career, and he travels frequently. But maybe to just kind of Stacey buck convention on, you know, we have questions that we can go through maybe if we get to them. You and I were just chatting briefly, and I know the timing for our interview is, you know, not ideal, but let's make the most of it and share what's going on with you right now.
Yeah, so in the last couple of days, we've lost some luminaries in the mountaineering and climbing communities. It seems like Jess Roskelly, David Lama, and Hans-Jörg Auer passed in an avalanche maybe yesterday or Tuesday night in Canada. And then just a couple days ago, Dave Treadway was killed in British Columbia. He's a professional skier. And for a lot of people, you know, these names don't necessarily maybe mean anything unless you are paying attention to climbing and skiing. And I think one of the hard things is, you know, a lot of people sometimes look at these type of athletes and say, well, why were they doing it? Are they crazy? And, you know, for me, the answer is always, not always, I guess, but definitely for these athletes and a lot of the athletes that I've had the opportunity to know and interact with, and many who've become friends that have passed over the years, no, they're not crazy. You know, these are people who are dedicated towards an inner vision and inner values. They're oftentimes incredibly humble, giving, spiritual people. And it's just one of the things that happens in the mountains, right? Is that, or in the prairies or in the oceans or big wave surfing or little wave surfing, people die. And most of us who are in the military understand that in a very visceral way. And for me, you know, it was the outdoors that ultimately helped, was the catalyst to pull me out of depression and suicidal ideology and addiction. And the mountains give a lot, and the mountains can also take away. And I think that's not unlike many of our military services, right? I mean, you know, I have a big beard and your hair is certainly out of rags these days. And at the same time, the military gave us so much, and it also takes a lot away. And I remember thinking that that was a profoundly unique experience when I left the military at 29. And what I realized is that that is profoundly the human experience. And in the meanwhile, it's up to us to try and build joy and protect those who are weaker than us and help them gain strength and empower them and help them to be the best they can be. And that's it. None of us are going to make it out of here alive. And I think the last few days have really brought that home. And, you know, everything from watching our parents grow old and their minds begin to fail and bodies begin to fail, to watching our children try and grapple with some of that. I have a 3-year-old, and I can't imagine what Dave Treadway's wife and his kids are going through right now, or any of those people's families. And to look at my 3-year-old and so deeply desire for her, to see the same high places and explore new ones and new waves and new beaches, to her, and know that in part of that exploration, there's this very real risk that I could go too soon, or that she could go before me. And that's the same fear that I know my parents had when I joined the military. And damn, if life isn't just hard, man. But also beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah, I just want to name that I feel on one part excited, because I think that so much of what you're delving into is so rich for our audience. And then I also feel torn because I don't know these people, but I feel your sadness, and I feel the loss for the world and for their families and for you. And I just want to name, I feel torn, because I want to dive into some of these topics that are so rich. And I also just want to make space, because I recognize the potency of what you're sharing and the vulnerability. And I respect and admire that, and don't want to rush that. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think, like I said, I mean, I think in many ways, you know, we talked beforehand about what we wanted to talk about and some of the questions. And I mean, it's from, not to say, you know, hopefully this doesn't sound too trite, but I mean, it's from these depths of sadness and pain that, you know, in my post-military career, I think have fueled me forward. And, you know, it's one of those things where we've got to figure out how to make life worth living. And I think a lot of us came home and deeply questioned that out of our military service. Many of us questioned that before we went in. You know, the military and the VA healthcare system are finally grappling for the first time with mental health traumas that service members have before they come into the military. We know that a number of our brothers and sisters have very significant trauma, developmental trauma growing up, and joined the military for a variety of reasons. Oftentimes one of those is to help strengthen ourselves and create some existing, you know, resilience and re-identify who we are. And I think that's one of the challenges when we get out, right? The military hands you an identity. And I think oftentimes within that significant structural element of the military, there's parts of us that are oftentimes, and you see service members, I was certainly this way, I think, who are able to, within that framework, really flourish and really be unique and really find out who they are, because they don't have to worry about so many of the other things in life that our non-military counterparts often have to worry about, right? You know where you're going to live. You know what you're going to wear. You're told what to do. or you're given a framework of how to do it, right? This is your left limit, your right limit, downrange is your target. And within that, I was lucky enough in the military where I was always given the opportunity to explore a multitude of ways to achieve the objective within those boundaries. And that was my goal in leadership as well. And I had NCOs who promoted that as well. And a lot of folks outside of the military don't get that. And I think people can find it in pursuits like climbing, alpinism, surfing, sailing, horseback riding, even hunting, painting, art, these types of things. But then when you step out of the military environment and you no longer have that framework, you know, it, you can go in so many different directions. And I think that becomes a real challenge. And mountaineering, alpinism, those type of things provide that type of structure again. But just like the military, that structure comes with a potential cost. And I realize I'm kind of rambling here. So
no, I think it's, you know, I'll add this for the show notes. I'm blanking on the exact title. I think it was called We Were Knights, or it's something to that extent. There was this 5-minute video that I watched that was about base jumpers, these two base jumpers who, or, you know, the guys with the squirrel suits. And it's a story about them. And they did this together for, you know, a decade, and one of them passes away in doing that. And what he said in doing that, because I completely identify with what you said at the start. I think for most of my life, when I see these people, like, of course I admire it, but for the most part, I'm like, what an idiot, you know, they're going to die. It's just kind of like writing them off. And then what I realized in watching this documentary, like one of the lines that the surviving man says is like, we committed to a lifestyle of being exactly who we are in the world. We decided to show up and own who we are and completely express that. And it just so happened that the people we are people who really enjoy this extremely dangerous activity, but that was part of them expressing themselves in life, was like showing up, yes, realizing that what they did was risky, but also recognizing that's who they were. And it really shifted things for me to a point of admiration of seeing like, man, I think it takes a lot of courage for any of us to recognize and discover and own who we are. And then to be that in a world where, especially with Instagram and things like that, there's either a bias towards conformity or a bias towards a couple prepackaged molds. And if you deviate from that, you know, I think we've all been through high school, you deviate from that and you are punished. There is an extreme pain there. And so I recognize the courage of any of these people who say that this is who I am, or this is what allows me to express myself. And that's courageous in and of itself. But then to have that also be something that's risky and that is inherently dangerous is like an extra dose of that. So there's so much admiration I have for it. And I would love to, you know, learn more about your journey to this, like to this world of living outside, to living outdoors. Like it wasn't, from what I understand, it wasn't always who you were, but it played a phenomenally important role in your life. Like, take us through that journey.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, like what you said, I mean, I think one of the things that I am more acutely aware of now at age of 40 than I ever have been is that there's so many people whose daily existence and just trying to be who they are daily, let alone committing to base jumping, rock climbing, whitewater, their daily existence feels very much under threat. And I don't even know how to reconcile that, right? Like my daily, you know, I mean, I wake up every morning and check, you know, I still check the avalanche reports and everything else like that and think about my activities for the day. And there's a lot of people who, based off of gender identity, religion, sexual identity, just their daily life is that struggle, you know? Being them, bringing them full selves just to walk down a street is a challenge. And, you know, I think for me, the outdoors was a place where, you know, and large, you know, nobody really questions me wherever I go. I'm a 6'7" white guy. So people typically give me a wide berth. But the outdoors was ultimately that place where I could feel fully myself. And one of those things going all the way back to, you know, as a kid, I grew up in South Dakota, Eastern South Dakota. And I grew up in a hockey town. My mom made me figure skate. My name was Stacy. I was a tall, incredibly awkward kid for most of my life. I'm still incredibly awkward and tall, but you kind of learn to make that, you know, the things that make you kind of weak or stand out when you're young, oftentimes are those things which you can celebrate and are celebrated about you as you age, right? Mm-hmm. Is like figure out how to turn those things into benefit. And but I remember, you know, I was tall and I couldn't really play basketball. I graduated high school at like 6'4", like a buck 50 or a buck 60. I had an ROTC scholarship and the recruiting sergeant actually lied on my paperwork so that I could be heavy enough for the military. And he was like, I think you try really hard. You're going to be a great, you know, you'll do great. You just got to work really hard. And I'm not going to kick you out now before you get started on this road. Because there was this weird physical. And I remember I had to do things like throw a basketball and do pull-ups. And I still can't do pull-ups to save my life. And it was funny because it's not like you had to do pull-ups in the APFT for the Army physical fitness test. But so he fudged the numbers on my pull-ups and my weight so that I would get in. And swimming was that original place for me, whereas a tall, really awkward kid who couldn't shoot, couldn't play ball, you know, the water fits around you. And that was always my safe place as a kid. And that's where I kind of learned confidence and athleticism. And but I also did have a solid background in playing in the outdoors. You know, I grew up like a lot of kids in the 80s and early 90s. I remember once there was a huge snowstorm and there were massive drifts of snow around the house, and my dad like opened up a window, I think, and threw my brother and I out with some shovels and was like, you can come in when you can open the door, basically. And that, you know, that wasn't a surprise. Like, my brother and I were excited about it. I think we probably spent 3 hours building snow forts and snow caves, and then my parents needed to go outside and we're like, where are the kids, you know? And we were like, we're not gonna shovel, we're gonna go have fun and play out here. And so fast forward that to 2009, I'd been home from Iraq for 2 years. I moved out to Boulder, Colorado for a job from Philadelphia, where I was living when I got out of the Army. And I was really suicidal and really struggling with a lot of depression and anxiety issues and identity issues and adjustment to, you know, world outside of this uniform. And a friend of mine that I'd served with in Baghdad called me up. You know, we were talking and he said, well, you got to do something about it. And I was like, well, what? Like, should I go back into the Army? And he's like, well, why don't we try rock climbing? And so a week, 10 days later, he gave me the date. I remember thinking to myself, well, I could commit suicide this Tuesday or, you know, two Tuesdays from now. I'm just going to end it all. What does it really matter when it happens? And he was a big, tall, lanky guy too. And he got me out climbing on the first flat iron there in Boulder, Colorado. And that pretty much changed the course of my life.
Hmm. Man, there's so much to delve into, and I just want to appreciate your courage and candor on that. I think that we all know numbers that talk about how prevalent of the problem this is in the military, and when it comes to talking about it, it's no one talks about it, and so it's just really encouraged to hear your openness, and I hope for listeners that I can only speak for myself. The impact on me when Stacy shares his story like this is one of tremendous admiration and respect. Like, for him to show the courage to be vulnerable about his own personal struggle makes me like him more and respect him more. And I think that for most people, when you're on the other side of that, the thought of sharing that, I imagine most people feel a fear of judgment, a fear of isolation. They feel like they're completely unique. I hate to ruin it for listeners. You're a snowflake in many ways, but if you struggle with any sort of depression or suicidal thoughts, you're actually not in a minority. There's a lot of our brothers and sisters who struggle with that. And so I want to say, first of all, thank you for sharing that, Stacy. What was it about climbing? What was it about getting out that just kind of shifted things for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a couple things, right? The first was just the total physical commitment that was necessary for me to make it up the rock wall. You know, now I could go back. Well, when I was climbing hard, I haven't climbed a lot since my daughter was born, has been born. I've done a lot of other things, skiing and rafting primarily, and some ski mountaineering, but, I think it was the total commitment, right? I mean, a lot of the times we live in our heads, or we, you know, in 2009, I didn't live in my phone, but I think a lot of people do now. But we struggle with those things, right? And there's a million different thoughts coming in and images and ideas. And for a lot of folks that I've worked with, and myself included, even if you don't have trauma, right, even if you don't have any post-traumatic stress or adjustment trauma, I think we can all wonder, what are we doing with our lives, right? I mean, the military for myself and many others was very clear and on a day-to-day level made a ton of sense. On a month-to-month and year-to-year level, okay, maybe it didn't make sense. And when you pull yourself into the kind of that macro level of thinking, it's hard. And that's why we got out. But the day-to-day is what we loved about it. And for me, I felt guilty that I was no longer at war. I felt fearful that I wouldn't live up to the standards that my fallen comrades had set. And some of that is lionizing them, right? A little bit unfairly. I mean, we put our fallen friends up on pedestals, I think. And oftentimes when you come home, you get put up on a pedestal, right? Like, how many free beers did you get when you first came home? And people want to, you know, absolve their own guilt for not serving, for not being there, for not doing more to prevent a war or create smart war policy, that they do something, right? There's a concern that they're not going to do anything. So people want to do something, which I appreciate, even if it is the wrong thing. And on that rock wall, none of that, I couldn't have any of those thoughts, right? Like, I was just trying to get up a rock wall. I was just a human being attached to a slim cord of rope with every opportunity to, in my mind, to fall and die. And that level of total commitment pulled me so far out of my head, and in my own way, to quote every great first sergeant ever, hey, LT, pull your head out of your ass and get focused. And rock climbing did that for me. And I remember getting to the top and several pitches later with Chuck and tying into the belay and to go down and just kind of, you know, or to rappel down. And I had a massive somatic experience. My body was shaking. And I think it was just a lot of that stress that had been deep into who I was just was released because I finally was in that moment. And so I came down from that rock wall and made a decision that I would figure out how to get other veterans outside. And there were some great programs doing it at the time. Outward Bound was doing a lot of work. No Barriers Warriors was just starting to stand up, but I didn't feel like there was anything kind of for everyday engagement. And so that set the wheels in motion for what 8 months later, 9 months later, after going on an Outward Bound course, would become Veterans Expeditions, which I founded with Nick Watson. About a year after that, I pitched a grant idea to the Sierra Club. So this is 2011 now, and they ended up hiring me off of a grant and a grant request. So you got to be careful when you write those grant requests. And that was the last 7 years of my life. I ran their military outdoors program, and then I ran their overall Sierra Club outdoors program. And then about a year ago, I quit my job. And I've been consulting with a variety of organizations, working kind of at the working at the intersection of health and the outdoors. And also this, you mentioned Adventure Not War. So Iraq was the second part of that project. We'd gone to Angola a couple of years prior, where I'd served as a EOD specialist, explosive ordnance disposal tech EOD specialist. And then in March, got home from a ski expedition in Afghanistan. So I, a quote unquote normal job wasn't super conducive to taking off multiple weeks at a time to go ski in former war zones or current war zones.
I think that there's so much great about that. One thing I'll add is I did my first multi-pitch rock climbing experience last October at El Dorado Canyon over by where your old stomping grounds, and totally echo what you say in terms of like the visceral nature of having to be present. Like, it's just, you know, meditation is one thing. I think it's great. And then like rock climbing is like a active form of meditation.
Totally.
But the thing that I'll add as well is like, I haven't found anything as effective as at supercharging the shitty little voice that whispers in my ear that tells me all the bad things about me and all the ways in which I'm incapable. Like, there's something about that experience for me that I was on the wall. Like, it's really having to confront all the insecurities, all the self-doubt, all of the all of that inner critic of like not being able to. And it's kind of silly when viewed at a distance, or maybe even hearing about it, because you see that you're tethered to the wall and you see that it's, you know, it seems like inherently safe. But when you're there and you're looking down and things look look completely different. Everything is steeper and everything is higher. And it is activating that primal part of us that's like you are steps away from death. And
I think what's interesting is, you know, a lot of people, there's two points that raises for me. One is, a lot of times people, especially early on, they said, oh, you're an adrenaline junkie, right? Like you're seeking that adrenaline. And no, actually, what I'm seeking is that kind of profound stillness that you find when you're able to silence that voice, right? And it's not to say that there aren't moments of adrenaline, but on a multi-pitch climb, right, there's a lot of boredom if you move it in the wrong direction, right? Like, you get up and you're working on anchors and you're putting yourself into the wall and your partner's like flubbing around and like, you're like, really, now's when you want to take a drink? Like, hold on, I got to do this out of the other thing. Or you know, you're kind of flubbing around and it's like maybe a little cold. And, you know, I mean, so it takes time, right? And then you're belaying and then you're climbing and then you're like, what are they struggling with? And then you get up on the pitch and you're like, oh, this is what they're struggling with. So, I mean, there's these moments of adrenaline, a little fall or whatever, but I mean, I think it's like it's like a perfect run in the river. If I'm going through big rapids, yeah, that charges me up and I'm super stoked. The adrenaline kind of happens earlier, but then if I run a smooth line, what I feel is profound calm in that moment, right? If I'm running the line well. The adrenaline comes if I'm not doing it well. And if you've ever rafted with me, you know that that's a more adrenaline experience for me. Or like skiing, like, yeah, I'm laughing and singing in deep powder, but oftentimes I'm also so silent when my body's finally in tune, my physical fitness is coming in tune, and you just feel like the mountain and you, there's no difference in that, right? And it's in the same way that we teach outstanding marksmanship, is that you become one with the target, you become, you know, the breathing and some of those things. And so for a long time, the second piece of that is, for a long time, I felt like the outdoors replicated the positive aspects of combat, replicated the positive aspects of the military, right? Which was camaraderie, sense of self, sense of belonging to something much bigger than you. This, what for me was a very positive experience. I know other people had very negative experiences. But what I kind of came to realize over the years, and I'm not saying any of your listeners who are coming out of the military right away, or it may feel completely different than me. And I think if I was to talk to Stacey Bear in 2007 from Stacey Bear in 2019, 2007 Stacey might be like, what the fuck, dude? Like, are you on acid? Or like, I'm never going to be that way. But I think war ends up corrupting the positive, the most exciting and the most beneficial parts of being outside, versus the other way around. But for me, it was important to frame the outdoors early on as an experience that I could relate to, that was similar to this really, in some ways, warm and amazing and exciting and incredible experience that was combat, back to the outdoors. Like that was important to me. Cause just like combat, right, there's a lot of boredom and some intense moments of adrenaline, same thing with explosive ordnance disposal. And so I needed that to kind of reframe and move forward. And I think one of the hard things we have in our society is a willingness to let people evolve and a willingness to accept people for where they're at and say, yeah, what you feel is real. What you feel, I want to recognize and appreciate, even if I don't feel that way because of my experiences and the path that I've been on. And what I hope is that those people who are still in that, trying to relate everything back to war, who want or miss war or miss that level of camaraderie, I want to honor that. And I want to invite them on their own pathway and journey and see what I can do to help them or support them in their own journey to evolve and grow, so that over time they begin to see the war, their military experience, as a part of, but not necessarily all of, who they are. And that's a tough thing. And I think especially if you look at, you know, I'm 40, I think the younger generation of veterans, of warriors, of non-warriors, non-veterans are, and I think for good reason, impatient.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what you said resonates. I think that one of the things that I take away from, or I abstract for listeners, is I love that thought of evolution and of growth. And one thing that at least comes through for me, I'm not sure if this is, if you would say this is true for you, but it's like, I see in the things that you're doing, and by that I mean both rock climbing as well as leading an organization and growing and applying for a grant, like all of these things are growth. All of these things are a phrase that I like. I don't know if this resonates with listeners, but it's like your edge. It's like finding that edge. Like that's something that came through for me for climbing, is like, man, I am like definitely at my edge. Academically, they'll call it the zone of proximal development. It's like not where you're like screaming and out of your comfort zone, but you are like, you're feeling it. You know, if you've stood on the edge of a pool, or you've cliff jumped, like you've got that sense of like, should I do it? And when you leap, when you take that, that's, in my view, that's where all the good stuff comes from. That's where all the growth comes from. And like, it's not about pushing these things to painful extremes. I think that leads to detriment. But like what I hear and what you're saying is finding a way to grow and to continuously evolve and continuously define who you are right now, not relying on, you know, I was in submarines 10 years ago. Yes, that is part of my identity, but who I am today is very different, and who I am in a week will be very different. Like we're constantly evolving. And I think that that's a nuance and a sophisticated view that's hard to get your head around. It's easier to be like, I'm Justin, the submarine guy. I'm Justin, the Navy guy. But it's also, you know, that's a piece of me. That's a part of me. And then like who I am is much more complex. And what I also hope that listeners take away is, you know, finding a way, like, and if what Stacy's sharing resonates with you, I'll have lots of links in the show notes, like reach out to him, reach out to his organization. There are so many organizations like this. This could be a great outlet. And I know this will resonate with so many listeners. And if the foundation of what he's saying resonates, but maybe the outdoors is not your thing, like find that thing to push you to your edge, like find that edge of your comfort zone, the thing that makes you feel a little squeamish, and find ways to inch closer to that. And I have no idea what that is for listeners. Maybe that is teaching high school students. Maybe that is, you know, entering a race, maybe like just find whatever it is. I hope it comes through in Stacy's voice, and when he's saying like there's so much power there of that growth.
Yeah, totally. And I mean a year ago I couldn't have gone this long without making a Navy joke, right? And here we are, and I haven't even begun to bag on you. And then a submariner, man, like that's just, there's so much opportunity here.
Just inviting you. It I'm just tempting you here.
I know my father-in-law is, I always joke, my father-in-law is a nuclear technician, and he was on a submarine. And when Mackenzie and I, who's now my wife, were dating, I always felt bad for him. I'm like, man, you know, your daughter brings home an environmental army veteran. like, how hard is this for you? And he and I have gotten to be pretty close over the years, not so much because of our military experience, but because of our love of the mountains. And although I do think the military experience is, you know, you're like, all right, there's likely a similar construct as to why we both joined the military. And for most people, there are a few similarities there. And yeah, I mean, and climbing or skiing may not be it for people. I mean, it could be hunting. It could be tie flying. It could be, I know this guy in Colorado, and he, if you met him, you'd think like, okay, this is like the prototypical veteran, right, that the media likes to show us. I mean, the dude is, he's jacked. He's covered in tattoos. He's got neck tattoos. And he's one of the softest, most gentle people. And he's a potter, right? I mean, he makes clay pots. This is his thing, right? And that's the thing. He's found that thing that pushes him. He's found that thing that engages him, that he can feel passionate about, that he can feel joy about, that he can see when he's in that process or teaching or giving of himself that art, and how that art influences him, that's the thing, right? My buddy P. Dubs down in Texas is a poet, and an incredible poet, and was also served this country, you know? And so I think it's finding whatever that is. I personally believe everybody can find something in the outdoors, but it's one of the reasons over the last few years I've really, like, I want to connect people to the outdoors, but I don't necessarily want to connect everybody to people climbing or even exercising in the outdoors, because some people hate exercise. Like, I hate running. I want to like running. Army fucking ruined running for me, man. And every time I put on running shoes, I'm like, oh, man, you know, like, cadence comes back to my head, and I start thinking about those slow shuffling runs as a tall guy just pounding my knees and the road guard bells. So I'm like, I'm not going to run. I don't want to ask people. I do want people to try and find a way to connect to beauty. That's what I think, especially veterans, but all people, to find a way to connect to beauty and joy. And that might be the outdoors, but it might be teaching. It might be art. It might be filmmaking. It might be photography. It might be writing. It might be working on your car, rebuild a car, like find something that allows you to be more than who you are. Mm. And I think that's really the key thing. And I think, you know, like you were saying, I mean, social media, all that stuff, it's a tool and it can be really positive. And I think sometimes it can be really, really negative because we think we see other people having success or doing all this stuff. And it's like, I love the episode with Robin. First of all, I love Robin. Mm. She's incredible. But, you know, she's like, yeah, it took me 13 years to figure out what I wanted to do. And I think a lot of times people look at somebody like Robin and they're like, well, look at where she's at. How easy has it been for her? And they don't know the backstory. And like, yeah, I've been doing all this stuff, but man, I finally feel like I'm about to start my career after 12 years of doing this.
I love that. And I think, you know, what was challenging for me in Robin's interview is I'm like such a destination guy. I'm so much about like, this is where I'm going, and everything between now and where I get there is like wasted space. And I think her story and in your story as well, it's so compelling because like all the juice is in that journey. Like all the juice is in the discoveries and the mistakes and the insights and the learnings and all the things that we accumulate along the way. And I recognize in myself that like how much of that goodness I forfeit by being so fixated on a destination. And I think in a lot of the podcasts I listen to, a lot of the popular media I consume, it's also about the most efficient acquisition of that destination. It's like, how can I shorten the journey as much as possible? And what I love in, you know, in your journey is like that. I picture the reps that you're doing every time you're outdoors, every time that you are opening yourself up. And I would call it kind of like that oneness. And I think I think you beautifully applied that to the military as well. The oneness we felt with our community, with our purpose. But like, I imagine you doing these reps every time you're outdoors and you're exposing yourself to something massively bigger than yourself. You're exposing yourself to something that inspires you and something that draws some peace out of you. And I feel like in my own life, it's almost like, you know, when you have those experiences, your first one was with rock climbing. Like when you have that experience, it's almost like, what the fuck is this thing? I didn't even know what this thing was.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, each repetition is like, okay, what's the shape of this thing? What's the feel of this thing? And getting to know that, getting to access that more, but like realizing there's a whole new world. And for, especially for listeners who are on active duty, knowing that there are endless worlds beyond what you're doing right now. And that has maybe defined your last 5, 10, or 20 years, it does not need to define, you don't need to abandon it, but it doesn't need to define your future. And you can find equally compelling worlds, equally compelling things that bring you more alive, that could be poetry, that could be pottery. And I love those examples because my Navy self would be the first to make fun of those two persons.
Totally.
You know?
Well, but I still make fun of the guy.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, I think I remember Scott Ostrom said, you know, about his military career, and he was a Marine, and he said, you know, for years, I thought the biggest, baddest, coolest thing I'd ever done was behind me. And what could I do in front of me? And the outdoors for Scott gave him an opportunity to think about where he could go. And I have a great aunt, Women's Army Corps. She's 100 years old. If you can get to Fairmont, Minnesota in the next month or two, I mean, go. I'll set up the interview for you. She's a hoot. And, you know, I remember talking to her 2 football seasons ago. She's a huge Minnesota Vikings fan, right? And she said to me, she said, well, if the Vikings don't win the Super Bowl next year or this year, if the Vikings don't win the Super Bowl this year, I just don't know, you know, I'll never cheer for him again. And I thought she was referring to the fact that she was nearly 100 and was going to die. And I was kind of sad about that. And I said, well, Mildred, you know, like, you seem like you're in pretty good health. What are you talking about? And she goes, Stacy, I've been alive as longer than the Vikings have been a franchise. If they can't win a Super Bowl by the time I'm 100 years old, I'm going to find a new team. And I thought to myself, what a great way to wake up and think every day, right? Like, She's not waking up every day going, oh, I'm 100 years old. What do I have to look forward to? She's finding those things to look forward to, and she's finding those things to continue to do. And I think that's a hard part in the military. And it's hard because we live in a, like, life is hard, you know, and life is difficult and painful and challenging. And, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why we can be really sad and anxious. And we need to find a way for that anxiety and that sadness to motivate us to do joy, to bring joy to others, to bring joy to ourselves, and to try and find those solutions as opposed to be crippled by it. But you know, at the same time, every now and again, you're going to be in a hole. You're going to be in a dank, dirty, dark place. And I think for a long time, we all, you know, service members, we all want to like run in and pull somebody out of that place, right? But life isn't the long-term combat zone, hopefully, for most people, especially in the States. And I think sometimes we've just got to walk with people as they're in that moment when they're feeling it. We just got to sit down or lay down with people when they're in the shit and they're deep in their own heads and let them know, hey, we're here. And I don't know what the future holds, man. I don't know. I can't tell you it's going to necessarily get better. All I can tell you is that I'm here. And for me, that's replicated so much of what I've learned in the outdoors as part of that, right? I mean, I've had broken skis, broken bindings. I've dropped belay devices. I've, you know, watched the rope run through. To, oh, should have tied a knot in. What are you going to do? Well, I guess we can be here or we can find a way through. And that's what you do. And then you take those lessons, hopefully, and you incorporate them into the next time you go forward and the next time you go forward. And that process is just one of constant learning and constant growth. And it's exhausting, but I mean, you know, I don't know what else I'd do with my time.
I'm aware of just kind of the limited time we have left, and just want to, just say, you know, I wish we had 4 hours and maybe a couple beers to continue the conversation and hope we're able to connect in person. I want to make sure that, especially for listeners for the show notes, I want to make space for anything you want to highlight that could be your organization, resources, things like that. And then I'd love to just get the sneak peek. You've got an ambitious year or so ahead of you, and would love for you to share with listeners kind of what's ahead for you.
Yeah. So in terms of resources, you know, I would start in getting in the outdoors or careers in the outdoors or whatever it is you're looking to do next. There's a million ways to get involved. I would highly recommend just about any veteran coming off active or any service member coming off active duty, you don't know what to do next, get a job that allows you to do something that you think or know could be really fun. Right? If you don't have a family, if you have retirement coming, if you have an opportunity to do this, you know, if you're single or you don't have kids yet, or your partner's open to it, go stack chairs at a ski resort, go be a river guide, go save your money and do a motorcycle journey from Alaska down to the tip of South America. Go and do and be, and don't think you have to know what you want to do for a long time, right? And find those things and find those things you're passionate about, not just the things that you think you have to do. And that can be hard. That's a challenge. But that would be my first thought. Veterans Conservation Corps are a great way to look at things. Outward Bound for Veterans is a great place. No Bears, Warriors, Veterans Expedition. So there's a lot of those resources. Yeah. So what am I doing now? I do two things broadly. One is this Adventure Not War project, which we've talked about. We're in post-production with our film about two Afghan skiers that we met in Afghanistan. Really amazing guys. And that film will be out hopefully this fall. Hopefully we'll be doing a little tour. You can find a little bit more about that at adventurenotwar.com. It's probably a little bit easier just to follow me on Instagram. I need to update the website. My Instagram is Stacy, Stacyabare, or Adventure Not War on Facebook is pretty well updated. Next winter season, I hope to go back to Abkhazia in the former Soviet state of Georgia. And that'll be the fourth place for event that we've been for Adventure Not War. The last two after that will be Bosnia and then South Dakota, because I grew up in South Dakota and I'm really interested in exploring with members of the Sioux Nation, their experience in that land, because, you know, we oftentimes talk about Afghanistan as the longest war in U.S. history. That's factually incorrect because of the tribal wars, especially the Dakota War specifically. So I'm looking for to try and find a way to do that the right way. I don't, you know, I am not Lakota. I'm not native. My family was at one point indigenous, maybe to Bosnia and the Czech Republic. So, and then I have some other projects brewing with other folks. I mean, the other thing I do is I consult for a number of nonprofits and for-profits working on health and wellness in the outdoors. And some of those projects I thought I was going to be able to talk about today, but we're not quite there with our ability to go public on those. But some really exciting stuff happening around large-scale land conservation overseas, and hoping to create a vehicle for those folks who are interested or think they have a great idea that would be a good business in the outdoor industry, that we can create sort of a startup week, a tech startup week type function for outdoor and adventure. And so hope to be able to release more of that information in the next couple of weeks. And there's going to be some opportunities for veterans and supporters of veterans and everyday people to get involved. And so a lot of really exciting stuff. For me, quitting my job was the best thing that could have happened to me. I don't know if my partner always agrees with me on that, but so far we've been able to get enough clients and contracts in, and I think I'm a lot more relaxed than I've ever been. So
Let me ask you this too, and I ask this selfishly because I've got a 10-week-old baby boy one floor above me right now. How do you reconcile, you know, how do you reconcile, and you kind of spoke to this very briefly at the start, but like, how do you reconcile with your daughter? The way that I think about it is, and I feel I don't do nearly the type of stuff you do, but it's like, there's part of me that's like, I want to set an example for my son of someone who lives fully, who embraces life without hesitation. And at the same time, I'm very cognizant of my duty. I'm aware of my duty to be an example and my duty to actually be alive and be there for him. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you reconcile those things?
That's really hard. And, you know, my wife, I was going to say, my wife, after our daughter was born, my wife said, you've got to go to Iraq. You've got to go back. You know, this is something that you've been talking about and dreaming about and is so present in who you are that you need to go do it. She did joke that she wanted me to do it quickly because if I died, Wilder was young enough that she could get remarried and wouldn't miss her biological father. So you have to have some dark humor, evidently. When you say that out loud, it sounds really horrible, but it's pretty funny, actually. You know, I do a number of things. I have a tattoo, a very visible tattoo of my daughter's birthday that I'm constantly reminded of. My ski gloves, all pairs of my ski gloves have her initials on them, so that as I'm making decisions, there's always an opportunity for me to see her. You know, that's part of it for me is a constant opportunity to support that in risk management. I take a lot less risks than I used to. I'm very risk averse, actually. And, you know, I learned that in a short and brief climbing apprenticeship with Alex Honnold in Angola. He's an incredible climber. I find Alex to be one of the safest climbers, very logical, very reasonable person. And you want to minimize as much objective risk as you possibly can. And you want to put yourself in the best position possible for subjective risk. And then you have to go for it. And what we talk about in our house a lot is that a dream? Is that something, is it a passion? Is it something you cannot not do? And if it is, go do it. And if you think it's just something cool to do, then let's see how it fits into the broader array of the things we're trying to do. And over time, that means, you know, I had a couple raft trips that I was really looking forward to this year with some really good friends. And I was looking forward to guiding a little bit on the river, and I had other work that got in the way. And I have to prioritize work that pays bills. I have to prioritize work that pushes me towards achieving my dreams. I have to prioritize work that helps me dream new dreams. And so the hardest thing is not saying no to those things you want or that you don't want to do. The hardest thing is saying no to those things you want to do, but that don't feed into that top priority. And so, you know, for me, unfortunately, climbing has been one of the trade-offs, right? Like, I just haven't climbed a lot in the last 3 years because the river was more important and because spending time skiing was more important. And then I had to balance the amount of time that I spent in the ski season. That time had to come out of the summer season, right? For work and for some of the engagement. And so, you know, but you find joy in that. I mean, you know, being a dad is fucking hard, but it's also like the coolest thing in the entire world. And, you know, this morning I was running a little late, but my daughter wanted to sleep in. And so I just laid down next to her and watched her little chest rise and fall and her little eyelids flutter and allowed myself to find that immense awe. And I found myself, you know, 4 hours in the backcountry looks a lot different with a toddler than it does when you're by yourself, but you see things you hadn't seen for years. And who knew that you could do so many things with a paper plate and cotton puffs? You know, turns out I love arts and crafts. Like I, you know, I found myself playing with my daughter's toys after she's gone a nap. I'm like, oh, I just want to finish this block. So, but yeah, it's a tough thing to reconcile, but I think it's a harder thing to reconcile if you don't go. And if you hate putting on that suit every morning or whatever it is, and you hate it and you don't see the value that it's bringing into your life. And I have friends who don't like their jobs, but stay in their jobs because their jobs allow them access to these other amazing parts of their lives, if that makes sense. And that's fine. That's great. You know, I've done a lot of really horrible work or work that was really boring to make ends meet so that I could have that next objective. And I think sometimes we want everything in our lives to, we always want to be in the Robin Brown situation, right? We're in a career and a job we love. We're super stoked and everything else like that. And that's awesome. And that's the goal, but that's not always there. And, or it might be there. And then after a few years, you dream new dreams and you want new things and you want to evolve and you want to grow. And that former dream job that you're still in is no longer the dream job. And that's okay. It doesn't make you ungrateful. It doesn't mean you're taking granted for things. It means you're evolving. And that's the stuff I think that is actually a lot harder for me to balance than it is to balance, you know, am I going to go on this whitewater trip? Or, you know, my wife was, I mean, we were all nervous that I was going to Afghanistan, but, you know, we knew that that was something that for me, yeah, and people can look at it and say that's really selfish. Fine. They can think that. I hope they don't take another serving of dessert. I hope they don't lie to their partner or their friends and stay at the bar another half hour longer. I hope they don't, you know, I hope that they find time to focus on their lives and their kids. I hope they, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we can look at and be like, that's selfish or this person's fucking crazy. But in my, you know, most of the people I know in the military weren't crazy, even though they did some crazy stuff. And we had some crazy fun times and some crazy bad times. And I've yet to meet anybody, you know, Dean Potter was another guy that I got to know. You know, he was a wingsuiter. He unfortunately passed, was killed. And I knew Dean because we'd show up at these events and Dean and I were the tall guys. And so we always talked about being tall or a couple times we'd end up wearing the same clothes because like there's only so many like plaid shirts that are made in extra large tall or whatever. His dog used to pee on my leg a lot and it was kind of funny. And we got to know each other really well and Dean didn't have a death wish. Dean wanted to live, man. Dean wanted to live like nobody else I've ever met wanted to live. And then he didn't. But what do we take from that? And but Dean was also really aware of why I didn't have kids. And so I think finding that balance is hard, but that's ultimately the joy of life.
Well, Stacy, I hope this is the first of many conversations. Lots of things we did not get to for listeners. I'll add a bunch of information in the show notes. But thank you for the work that you're doing to support the military community. Thank you for your courage in sharing what your experience has been and what has helped you. I know it's going to help a lot of people listening as well.
Oh, thank you and your team over there. Super stoked to be on the podcast and lots of cool guests. I'm always amazed at who I learn about or hear about or different perspectives. And let's hope everybody can continue to remember that multiple perspectives that oftentimes conflict are actually a really good thing.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized, professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision-making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.